You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Back. Top of the third hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast. This Thursday, June 13th, 2019. We're kind of holding off on calls. We took one early on. We lost Jim. We got and lost and got back and lost Paul again. Phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443. If you've been through this, you know what I'm talking about, and I hope that no one has to experience this unfortunate set of circumstances. It's really heartbreaking, to put it mildly. That's a huge understatement. To feel like you're helpless, a sort of helpless bystander to needless suffering, and what I would consider an erroneous perception, that being someone has become basically useless, undesirable, a burden, that to me is hogwash. When we start thinking of ourselves and one another in those terms, man, we are in a desperate and dire situation. No one, I don't think, should be thought of in those terms. So this has a direction, a directional momentum like so many things, and that sounds kind of trivial, I think, but really it does. If you've experienced it, you know what I'm talking about, where, like I said, you couple this with the experience that I mentioned where, I mean, imagine someone buying into this and then feeling like in the middle of the night in a hospice facility, for example, that they've changed their mind only to be sedated to the point of being unresponsive, because that's the answer in hospice to what they call terminal agitation. It happens all the time. Someone says, you know, I want to go home. Well, what happens when they genuinely want to go home? There is no caveat for that. There's no consideration for that. Imagine being sedated. How terrifying it would be to be locked in, shut in, and unable to speak for oneself, only to have folks show up the next morning, and like John and I were talking, essentially, you know, toasting one another, celebrating your life, and dividing up lots over your motionless body. You're still there. It's a sick, macabre sort of thing, in my humble estimation. So the point of clarification is this. When it came to, in my father's case, when it came to the CBD oil that my sister and brother-in-law had grabbed, gone to the trouble of, you know, researching, getting, kudos to them. When it came to that, at the point of hospice, in particular, you know, because that is basically one of the mile markers, so to speak. This is where we're going. This is the direction this is heading. It's end-of-life care. It's palliative care. It's a huge milepost. So in that context, when it came to the CBD oil or anything of that nature, basically in the context of the loss of quality of life, when you're on this bandwagon, any perceivable or attempted prolonging of someone's life, in this case my father's, at that point is also construed with loss of quality of life. construed as loss of quality of life. It's a weird thing to witness this. And so that's, you know, that was what was happening. I was saying, even while my father was in hospice, we were trying, my sister and I talked, you know, what can we do? And she was frustrated. I was frustrated. What can we do? We're having conversations, and I was there every day. She wasn't, not criticizing. I'm just saying, you know, this is what was going on. So trying to figure out what we can do. And, you know, so maybe while I'm here, I could be giving him this stuff while he's in hospice. And so, you know, we decided that's what we'd do. I had a conversation with the two people who were basically in charge of my father's affairs while he was still living. You know, power of attorney, medical power of attorney. The four of us actually had a conversation, and it was determined, in my estimation, that that's what we're going to do. We're going to give him this stuff, and, you know, who knows? And my sister and I were saying, who knows? Maybe he'll rebound a little bit. Maybe he'll rally and show signs of improvement. But see, hospice has terms for that too, consideration for that too. Sometimes right before people pass away, they show signs of rallying, they show signs of bouncing back. They have all of the angles sewn up so that there is no consideration. Again, like I said yesterday, basically they have a hammer and everything is a nail. So it dawned on me that, you know, I talked to my sister and I said, we probably should have some sort of preemptive conversation with these folks, which we didn't at the time, to say, if we see some signs, what sign or signs can we agree on that we will all acknowledge and recognize as, you know, signs of improvement or rallying that are not, you know, just another sign of the death march in hospice terms. That conversation never happened because, you know, it just seemed to me that no matter what we were doing, it would all be construed as part of the death march, if that makes sense. And it was. And so the point in that last point of clarification is that's what was happening. That's where we were at. And that's why, and there's a mental sort of direction and momentum. And I don't think people realize that they're doing it to the exclusion of all other considerations. And it really is a sick, macabre thing to witness, in my opinion. That's why people were all friends, family, loved ones, sitting around, laughing and joking, toasting and pronouncing last rites over my father's warm body. As he talked about where he'd be cremated, I was literally asked, you know, a week before he passed away. So, you know, there's no rush. We don't have to, you know, but we could be this place, that place. What are we doing? He's still alive. And why I, you know, all of this while I still was trying desperately to snatch him away to the cabin, which was his, essentially his dying request to several people, including the folks who were in charge of these decisions. So, you know, it's one of those things in life where you need to know what you know after the fact. You need to know that beforehand so that you can properly anticipate things. And I've had conversations since then with folks who can know. People, we all think, you know, this is what I'll do. And it's not just this situation. There are other, you know, cliche examples in life. If I was put in this situation, this is what I would do. Who is to say? We don't know. But, you know, the unfortunate reality, I would say, in this case is that you need to know, you need to have the body of knowledge and the experience beforehand that you unfortunately only gain after the fact. So hopefully some of this perspective is, as I said yesterday, edifying for someone at some point. And with that, I'll take a break and we'll go back to the phones. James in Washington, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hello. Good morning, Chris. Good morning. I just wanted to express my condolences, and we figured that something major must have happened because you're gone. And just wanted to let you know. I hate to say girlfriend. We've been together for 12 years, and we're just not married, but we love each other dearly. But her father, my father-in-law, I just wanted to say, like, just four or five things, and I always love when you just respond, because I'll get caught up, and I'll tell you, your show yesterday was very emotional for us, because this is what happened to us last year. She lost her father, and he was sort of like a local hero, sort of a minor celebrity, a chef in Oregon. And the reason I mention it is that, you know, they prided themselves as a family, as a restaurant family, to have the most natural food. This is way early on. I'm talking super filtered water. This is like 72. This is before bottled water, before all this stuff. Like, they would show off all this stuff at the restaurant, very technical as far as, you know, keeping any diet anybody wanted, if they were suffering from cancer or anything like that, they would make it. They would make special diets, special this, special that. And they're Chinese. And so he, you know, he's a little older. Your dad was pretty young. But all of a sudden, he's in the hospital. And what I'm amazed at, Chris, excuse me, what I'm amazed at is that here's this family. They never suffered a loss before because they came over here from China. And they go into the hospital, and all of a sudden, they just write everything off to the chemical treatment. Here's a man who never took a drug in his life. He never took aspirin. And then all of a sudden, the family, just because they're wearing the lab coats and everything,
right?
They just sort of go, okay, you know better than we do. And, you know, and I don't mean and to be cynical, but yeah.
That's exactly what I meant in the second hour when I said that sort of religious devotion is misplaced, misguided, I believe.
Right. And I just wanted to say two or three things very quickly. Just very quickly, because you and I are just about the same age, and there is realistic, you know, we do expect to see, you know, people passing in our lives. I think your dad was way too young. But keeping active, I think, is really important. I just discovered motorcycles safely, like, 3 years ago. It honestly helps my eyesight. It really does when I'm at the computer too much. But the other thing is, I just wanted to say this, and I was thinking maybe I shouldn't say this because I don't want you to take this the wrong way. And I don't want to take this anyone out there to take this the wrong way, because I know people who work in hospitals work very, very hard, very long hours. But picture this. I know you won't absorb it now, but maybe later. Think about this. I'm the only white guy, right, in the whole Chinese family that's at the hospital, and I'm in there in this intensive care or what have you. And so a lot of the people on the shifts didn't know I was with the family. So I would end up hearing the conversations and stuff because they would talk, not thinking, because they didn't know me, because we'd be going in and out of shifts. This was the middle of June last year. And some of the cynical and things that they would say, I honestly, Chris, I went out the hospital and just cried. I mean, there was a person saying to another worker, like, how's it going? He goes, oh, well, we'll just be playing we'll just be playing Blood Puppet all night, you know?
Yeah. I understand what you mean, and I experienced that. I mean, I've seen it before, but this was a much more, you know, intimate and sort of excruciating, even though it was only 13 days. It seemed like forever. It seemed like a year or 10 years. And that kind of cynicism and callous, unfortunately, I would say the same thing you said. I'm not trying to be critical of anyone, but it is a thing. It does happen. And there is a detachment that occurs.
And I just want to finish with this, is that yesterday I was listening to your show, and honestly, I was brokenhearted. It affected me, this listening to your show yesterday. I think your show is amazing anyway. But the thing that I was thinking is that this is sort of a surreal sense of humor that I have, sort of weird way of looking at things. But I was walking back home from our little pea patch here in Seattle, and there's a lot of hospital workers, and they're coming off the train or whatever, and they're wearing their light work clothes, so they have sort of a V-neck shape, and they had sort of a, a V shape over the shoulder. So like less, you know, it was really hot here yesterday. So they're wearing their light stuff, but they almost look like overalls. And I was thinking, not to put farmers down or anything, but this is more of an Orwellian thing. What would people think of all of these hospital workers working on our loved ones and everything else if they wore some sort of mechanical or overall or kind of thing as a bunch of folks? I mean, you know what I mean? We constantly give them this instant authority because of the white lab coat.
Right.
And I'll just say this. Honestly, Chris, I'm not kidding you. I swear to you this, that man, her father, who died last year, probably helped more people get into better health and probably saved them from cancer because of him making special diets. People can look him up. I'm not going to say the name of him, you know, but is basically the most important, one of the more important Chinese restaurants in the Pacific Northwest. And really cutting edge, very innovative man. And here he was, the town hero, going into the hospital, and all of a sudden nobody knows who he is, meaning like they know who he is, but they're giving him tons of drugs. It's just...
Yeah. And that's...
I don't know.
Exactly. There is no other consideration. It's one direction. This is what they're trained to do. And I agree. You know, all of these things play into that. The lab coat, the Milgram experiment concept. It's just interesting how overwhelming that is. And then, of course, there, you know, many of us have experienced the situation where if you challenge someone's authority or question someone's expertise, it's thought of as questioning someone's expertise. If you try to bring up some alternative, then that you are derided for, you know, how dare you even, this person is educated, who are you and what do you know? And, you know, in spite of the fact of everything that we see, you know, some of the things that I've mentioned, I mean, this is a community that is not insulated from corruption, for example. I mean, I did a series of shows back in 2013, I want to say, or was it 15, about the numerous editors-in-chief who had resigned from a variety of medical journals because of the ghostwritten articles that were becoming predominant. And I just mentioned the INSYS story yesterday, synthetic opioid maker agrees to pay $225 million settlement. That's just, you know, one drop in the bucket. And so it's just interesting, in spite of all of these things, and that's not to say that everyone is bad, it's just this religious devotion that's given to an industry that is not perfect by any means. And it's constantly learning and changing and, but, you know, like you said, I mean, in your father-in-law's case, people, to the exclusion of common sense, I would say, in his case, I mean, this is his life's work demonstrates that's not his mental leaning or ideological leaning. So,
yeah. I mean, the abstract thing about it, and I don't want to take, because this is, you know, I mean, this is, you know, this is about you and your father. I mean, but we all can relate. And the thing is, Chris, is, you know, it got so warped that it felt like, and I don't feel like I was reading into it. I mean, sometimes we all have that writerly's, you know, that writer's view. But I'm standing there, and it felt like they were happy to be giving sort of drugs to a celebrity. You know, like it was like, you know, and I even, it took
power,
like, and you know, and then the other thing that was so disappointing, and I'll just leave you this because there's more I want to say, but I want other people to get in, and I'll call you maybe later in the week or something. But the other thing is, you know, I'm not close with every sibling, but then there's one or two siblings, and like he's only in there for a day, and they're calling on the phone, you know, about funerals and things. And it's like...
yeah.
Anyway,
and that's exactly
you go.
What I was talking about.
I will talk to you again.
Yeah. Thanks for your call, James.
Thank you.
You bet. I appreciate it. And I look forward to you calling back. And I'm telling my story, you know, again, in hopes that it's edifying. And I'm not trying to negate anyone else's experience or say that my view is the only view. I'm intimating my experience and what happened, you know, the experience that I had through all of that, in hopes that it's edifying. And I think in some cases to reinforce what others feel, you know, what James was saying there at the end, to me, I think of the confirmation bias I was talking about yesterday, plus frequency illusion. And if I understand what James was saying, I mean, I guess I'll just say throughout the experience that I had, and it felt like time stood still. It felt like it was 3 weeks from start to finish, essentially. Not to be crass, but felt like at least a year or more. In some cases, it felt like 10 years. It was just crazy what was happening. And the leaps in perception that were occurring. So because of all of this, and because it's just, man, you know, it feels like inception or something, just layer upon layer upon layer. I kept trying to reach out to folks that I trusted and check in with them to sort of get a footing, because I was thinking, am I off base? I mean, where am I in all of this? Where is my perception? Am I seeing this as objectively as I think I can? Or am I just spinning off into, you know, some other place? And, you know, it was part of that is the Orwellian stuff that was happening, particularly at hospice, you know, these people, I mean, to witness it, people who were there and who kind of understood where I was at, seeing these hospice nurses, for example, that would come find a group of, you know, 3, 4, 5 of us standing there, and they would turn and face me directly and do that nod and repeat themselves over and over and over, and basically saying the same thing that I already said once, twice, or more before. And I mean, seeing those kinds of things, it's disturbing, quite frankly. Why is that so important for these people to do? Why are people telling me it looks like I'm having trouble when I'm not doing anything different than anyone else? I'm just standing there, we're just talking quietly amongst ourselves, and someone walks up and says, it looks like I'm having trouble. What trouble exactly am I having? I never got that. I never got exactly what trouble it looked like I was having, but I think it was the trouble they were having with my conscientious objection to what was happening that was really the trouble. Anyway, I'm sorry for your experience too, James, and for your girlfriend's experience. I mean, for lack of a better way to put it, I know, you know, how you described your guys' situation. And so, I mean, I'm sorry for the experience that you two endured, and for her father's experience. That's the kind of thing that I'm talking about, though. It's astonishing. And how people fall prey to it, and what James described, that's what I'm talking about. It's this thing that it's like a tractor beam people get sucked into. And I dare say in many cases, and I've heard this from folks on the coming through that experience on the tail end or in the aftermath somewhere, someone's left with a quiet moment. And they have misgivings about being sucked into that tractor beam and on that bandwagon. How could you not have guilt? Especially in the situation that James described, which isn't entirely different from my experience, because like I said, that's not what my father wanted. Specifically, expressly said, he wanted something else. You know, but didn't make a whole lot of noise about it. And, you know, as James described, his father-in-law's life's work essentially demonstrated that, if I had to guess, based on what I heard, he wouldn't go that direction, wouldn't put his undying faith and trust in that system. And so that's the thing that I was talking about in the second hour, that religious devotion. Interesting how that works. It's like a tractor beam. There is a psychology to it. To understand it, to know it on the front end, I think is important, if not imperative. Back to the phones, in the interest of time. Patricia in Florida, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Yes, I'm so overwhelmed by hearing all this because I almost died in a hospital almost 2 years ago. And my entire life, like the gentleman that you mentioned, my entire life has been against everything they stand for. I even went so far as, rather than vaccinate in 1973, my doctor said, I'm not your doctor anymore. And I said, fine. I went and found a manual on delivering without a doctor for firemen. And that's exactly what we did. And not once, but four times, four different times, children were born at home because of this one doctor who never forgave me when I had to go take one of my kids in. He goes, oh, I remember you. You're the one that doesn't believe in vaccination. And he started to make phone calls. I grabbed my son off that table so fast because I only went there to check and make sure he was okay. I grabbed him off that table so fast and out. And then I got home. And the next day, this is years and years ago, I get home and there's a note pinned to my door. There will be an 8 o'clock hearing at the court on Sunday, tomorrow on Sunday at 8 o'clock. And I called around. I knew natural hygienists all over the country. And they said, don't let them take your son. You'll never get him back, and they will do whatever they want. So I found a doctor who was willing. My sister was involved in the hospital, and she found a doctor willing to sign. I went in at 8 o'clock in the morning with two children, and I had the paper, and they were so disappointed. They had come with an armload of stuff against me. But that isn't even my experience. So my whole life has been dedicated to natural, wholesome health. Everybody who knows me. And when I had hip problems and I put them off for 5 years until it was so painful, I couldn't do a thing. And the doctor himself, who was an expert, said it was the hardest. The first one was the hardest one he'd ever had to do. And he had 14 that day, and mine was the worst. But anyway, because I put it off so long. But anyway, in the hospital, they called my case a failure to thrive. That's how they described it. Wow. They were trying to put drugs all the time, shots, even blood transfusion. I said, no. They said, well, you could die. And I said, God would never let me die. I don't know how I said it. I was delirious and everything. But somehow I got through it. But the feeling and the alien whole place, what you're saying, just it just brought all this emotion to me. So I had to call. But it was so alien to everything. It seemed so fake, and Orwellian is a good word.
Just
weird. And
absolutely.
Yeah. So anyway, I can't. I'm okay now. I've recovered. And got the other one done, and I was out in one day rather than 100 days is what it took the first time. But I was ready for them, and I stayed one day, and he let me go.
Glad to hear it. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. This product is superb. I have been taking it for about a year now, and I can feel my cardiovascular system run like a Swiss watch. I definitely recommend this product for anyone that has high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and heart palpitations, A+. It's potent, but it works. I have been waking up for the past 3 years with numb hands, and a week into using Extendivite, my numb hand seemed to have cleared up. My circulation was off, and now it's back on track. So I'm happy. I feel so energized, and I have my husband on it now. My mother-in-law has cholesterol problems, so I bought her a bottle as well. Thank you so much. Love the product. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Back. You know, I'm not trying to be derisive, but I am trying to shed some light. It's interesting when you have an opportunity to step back. I hope no one, you know, I pray that no one goes through the experience that I had. It was horrifying. And then to come through it, I mean, it really is surreal. It's Orwellian. It's hard to feel like you have your feet planted on the ground. And the subject of vaccines is definitely an issue today, but at least there's a conversation. And this, the what I'm talking about, the gaslighting is overwhelming. We live in a society where you are castigated and derided if you, you know, have the kind of audacity Patricia described, for example, to challenge establishment thinking or the establishment mantra. And it's ironic when you start to look into the past, like I said, you know, the Flexner Report, for example, and you can really, it's not too far beneath the surface to see that what has become institutionalized as the only way of thinking, at least that's what, you know, the establishment line is, wasn't too long ago that that wasn't the case. In fact, it was quite the opposite in many cases. The definition of allopathy, for example, which today has risen to the level of being considered the traditional method. You know, you look at the etymology of the word, and that's disingenuous. You go back to the coining of the term by Samuel Hahnemann, founder of homeopathy. It was a pejorative. You know? And even in very clinical and objective terms, allopathy was considered something that produced other effects. You know, basically, you're treating a symptom, it's going to cause other effects or other symptoms. And isn't that exactly what we see happening? When you put allopathy together with big pharma, and again, you talk about the profiteering and the racketeering involved, am I saying nothing good ever happens? Absolutely not. It's not that simple. It's a messy business. You know, there are people who obviously get into the medical industry with the express intention of the Hippocratic Oath. First, do no harm, and they want to help their fellow man, their fellow woman. Obviously, it's not that simple. I'm not, you know, it's not reductio ad absurdum, but as an industry or an ideological bent, again, to give it the sort of religious devotion to which it has been elevated is misguided, I would say. And when you start to think about it, I mean, people are treated like James said. What would happen if we, you know, these people in their scrubs, for example, were wearing a mechanics uniform, which I honestly I think is a more appropriate uniform because that's how we're treated. I've mentioned that in the past, how everything lends itself to this technocratic mantra. The dating websites treat people not like relationships are like you're seeking your one and only, your forever and ever after, but, you know, like a used car. Where can I get a red convertible, low miles, you know, coupe? And who knows, maybe when that model becomes less desirable, maybe it has high miles, maybe I'll trade it in. That's how relationships are treated. That's how we treat each other. I've mentioned experience of a family member who had a knee surgery, and basically the, you know, it's like getting retreads put on your body. Well, I ran too much, and so I blew my knee out, and I just got a cadaver ligament put in my knee, and I'm back on the road. Got a set of retreads put on, and that's. But if you don't think that's an option, you treat your body differently, you behave differently, you do different things, you make different choices. The same thing with insurance. I've mentioned that before. If we all had to own vehicles outright and self-insure, wouldn't we drive differently? Instead of having something that's financed to the hilt and, you know, with a $500 deductible, somebody bangs into it. You know what? Actually, I get a new one, so that's not so bad. It's reckless and irresponsible behavior. It's thoughtless in an orthodox sense. No wonder we're seeing these problems. And the biggest problem of all is if we don't realize this up front, then we find ourselves coming through the chute on these issues. And like so many other things, like the issue of vaccines, how could it be bad? Look at all of the information that's all around us. But like I've said before, you have reports like the RAND Corporation report, safety of vaccines. 9 out of 10 folks are public relations experts. One is a doctor in an unrelated field. You start to examine closer and you see that there is this propaganda everywhere you look. There is profiteering. People stand to make obscene profits. And, you know, there's corruption somewhere on the periphery. And so it would seem that in good conscience, we should look closer. We should be more scrutinous, more wise and discerning, more thoughtful. And, you know, so again, hopefully this, these last 2 days are edifying in that sense. Back to the phones, Chance in West Virginia. Thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hello, Chris. I just wanted to call and express my sincere condolences on the passing of your father. I haven't been listening to your show recently because, as fate would have it, I just lost an uncle under the same circumstances out of state over the weekend.
Sorry to hear about that. Sorry for your loss, too.
And can I ask you a question, Chris? Is your mama still alive?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. When I experienced that situation with my daddy, it was, 14 years ago. And I was seriously ill at the time, and my daddy was in hospice, so my mom had to deal with a tremendous emotional load. How she did it, God bless her, I don't know, but she did. And it was pretty rough on her, and I just tuned in a half hour ago. And I caught bits and pieces. And you're not alone. These situations are common to many people. I just lost an uncle. It was my daddy's youngest brother. He was in a nursing home under basically the same circumstances. So I experienced this from afar. It's a rough thing. You know, I don't know if I mentioned this to you. When my mama got ill, the same day that hospice home care was going to move in, she passed away hours previously. In her mind, she had her apprehensions about hospice, I guess. She was dead set against it, but she was not too well. And so the reason why I called is, the emotional situation is—it's a very difficult one, and I can relate. I could relate to what you're going through or what you've been going through. I don't know what else to say, but it hit home with me, so I had to call you, and I'll keep you in my prayers, Chris, and your mama.
Thanks, Chance. Appreciate it. Yeah, it's definitely difficult, and I don't know, you know, the experience that I had, there are conversations, you know, people say, is it better or worse? I mean, it's never fantastic, I think, when a loved one passes away. Obviously, that's difficult under any circumstances, but I think of the story of David and his child that didn't make it, I guess you might say. 2 Samuel chapter 12, I think. And the way David put it is kind of interesting. I mean, I definitely have, you know, I tried to fight as hard as I thought was reasonable and rational without, you know, going to the point of committing a felony or something like that, you know, trying to grab my dad and carry him out or whatever. But, you know, David, 2 Samuel 12, child doesn't make it. Then his servants said to him, what is this thing that you have done? While the child was alive, you fasted and wept. But when the child died, you arose and ate food. He said, while the child was still alive, I fasted and wept. For I said, who knows? The Lord may be gracious to me that the child may live. But now he has died, why should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he will not return to me. Then David comforted his wife Bathsheba, and think of that. But in under the circumstances that I've been through, I feel like it gives a person a kind of a form of PTSD, basically, that makes it difficult to grieve properly. Similar to being in combat, I would say, because it's not the, you know, a natural, he passed away in his sleep one night or something like that. It was a grueling set of circumstances, and it was deeply traumatizing to go through. So like I said, I hope no one has to endure that, and I hope that this is edifying to some. I really do hope that. And that, who knows, maybe it can help some folks maybe rethink things or anticipate circumstances that help them do something that feels more edifying in their case, you know, a building up instead of a destroying of life. I mean, the last thing you want is to go through circumstances where you believe what you're doing is the right thing, only to discover or feel like maybe after the fact that you know, a sense of guilt that maybe you did the wrong thing or you didn't do everything you could. That's the last thing any of us wants. Back to the phones. Fred in Iowa, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Yeah. Hi, Chris. I want to do all the talking, if you don't mind, and then get off the air so somebody else can call in. In 08, my mother passed away at 91 years old, and in the morning she was not fell out of her bed, but fell into a sitting position on the floor. And I asked her, you know, well, I called 911, which I did. Anyhow, they picked her up and took her down, and I drove down. And then they put her in a bed and give her some shots. And, you know, I'm really shook up. And her bed was only two doors down from the nurse's station, all that, and they were giggling and laughing and all that, which, anyhow, they see a lot of suffering and all that. But anyhow, yeah. I'm trying to talk to my mom, and, you know, she wasn't conscious, and I'm really nervous, and no doctors around, and I heard what they call the death rattle or the gurgling in her throat. And I ran about 30 feet to the nurse's station, and I said, get the blank doctor down here now. And so the doctor come pretty quick, you know, and they rushed her into the ER room. And then it was flooded with about 15 people from the staff, all in their doctors and all that, because, you know, I can see now they were afraid of a lawsuit. And I'm in there, and my mother's half clothed, and I'm just in torment and fear, and all everything, and my God, I don't want to look at my mom on the gurney and just going through hell. And I wanted to say, well, stop, you know, because I knew even then they're just doing it for show, you know. Mm-hmm. And then they declared her passed away. And so I went out of the room, and an attorney I had before, he done my taxes pro bonus. Well, he was on the staff of the hospital, and then I didn't know it at the time, and then he did tell me, and so they wanted to have me at a meeting, you know, about 6 p.m. a few days later, because I know they were afraid of a lawsuit, and so I was kind of timid, and I didn't know, and so I was, you know, real patient and all that, and I said my piece and, you know, give the doctors credit and all that. But then I decided on getting an autopsy, and boy, my family just went nuts about that. Well, I went ahead and done it, and $2,500 charge, which they never charged me for it. Anyhow, the family was just tore up. Mm-hmm. Okay. And my sister is retired after 40 years in the health profession, you know, as a nurse and all that. So 10 years ago, I went to the store where they have a pharmacy here in the town, and I'm talking to the pharmacist about not getting vaccines and flu shots. And boy, they just raised hell, and two of them chased me around the goddamn store, yapping at me, and I'm kept talking anyhow. So since then, I've talked to 800 or 900 people about don't getting a vaccine or a flu shot. Okay, then I couldn't see. I had a cataract removal. And when I went in there for the first eye, which it was a great improvement, but they wanted me to take a tranquilizer. I said, well, what the hell do I want to take a tranquilizer? I said, this is a well-established procedure. I'm not worried about it. And, oh, no, you got to have this. And I raised hell. And they finally said, well, you don't have to take a tranquilizer. And then I asked, I said, well, does many people do this? And then they told me, yeah, you're not the only one. There are other people. And then jumping ahead, I had one more deal. And I've talked about GMO foods for a long time. But things are changing, at least, you know, I get exacerbated with RBN from time to time. But there are changes. People are becoming aware. But we've got to get out there and talk to people as individuals. Yep. And then John's show yesterday was a terrific show. I missed a few things. But, and my sister, which she's overweight, and I mean, we love each other deeply, and I have some ferocious arguments, you know, at times, but anyhow, I broke a hip, and I won't go through how that happened. It takes too long and unnecessary, but I went up to her place in Minnesota from Iowa, and she took care of me. Well, I had excellent care, and then I took Tylenol 3, and it's just when I was in extreme pain, because when I was lying in bed in my bedroom up there at my sister's place, I would be cussing and screaming and almost crying and everything, and woke everybody up and have them get me out of bed and, you know, raise a certain legs and then do it real quick, you know, and I let out a scream. Well, anyhow, 2.5 weeks later, with the aid of a walker, I walked a mile, but I take a rest, and I heal pretty goddamn quick. But my sister, you know, she's overweight, and I talk about diet, you know, I belong to a church, a system that has had the health message out for 150 years. And I told her, don't get that your stomach operated on where they put it, you know, stomach could size your fist. I said, please don't do it. Well, she went ahead and done it, you know. And I've been talking to her for over 7 years about, you know, changing her diet, which she has. And, you know, there's been a heck of an improvement. But she worries about, like a lot of people, about getting enough protein. Well, hell, you only need 11% of protein in your diet. You know, people think protein, protein, protein. But anyhow, she's been brainwashed in the health profession for 40 years, and she loves me dearly and vice versa, but it's so ingrained. It's hell to get people to change. Well, yeah, I've yapped them on enough. Goodbye. Thank you. Take care, my friend. I love you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Fred. I appreciate it, as always. I really do. And it's interesting, you know, speaking of similar experiences, you know, the death rattle. The nurse told one of the folks in our group, you know, that we don't call it that anymore. They call it terminal respiratory secretions or terminal secretions. We don't call it the death rattle. It's not, that's, you know, that's a scary term. So they don't, that's a sort of a, you know, a pejorative now. I don't know for how long, but that was what one of the hospice nurses said specifically. And I have, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I have called for an autopsy too, and they're a lot more expensive now than they were 11 years ago, apparently. But some of that, I think, is for the expertise that we're trying to lean on. But I am having a similar experience. I mean, I'm told that my dad wanted to be cremated, and there's this effort to try to divide up his ashes and give some to this person, that person. And that, to me, and many of us who have done research on cremation know that it's almost impossible unless you're with your, you know, loved one who's passed away from the moment they pass away to the moment they're cremated. It's almost impossible to ensure that they're not, you're not, you know, getting ashes mixed together. Not to be crass, but I don't understand how an autopsy is more disrespectful than incinerating somebody's body, potentially mixing it with others, and then dividing it up among relatives. That seems, again, macabre to me. Whereas to understand cause of death definitively, especially in these circumstances, I think is important. Anyway, that'll do it for today's broadcast. Again, I hope these last couple of days have been edifying. I hope it was informative. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at libertystickers.com. Again, that's libertystickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.